Let me just remind you, of course, you know very well what we are talking about. We are talking about quantum states, and for two-dimensional Hilbert space, we use the word qubit, and then the word geometry can be used, let's say, verbatim. The space of pure states forms the famous Bloch sphere, and the set of mixed states forms the Bloch ball. We are, of course, using normalized states, and we identify all states which differ by a phase. For n equal 2, space of pure states is a sphere. However, for larger dimension, it's not a sphere anymore. It's, from mathematical point of view, a complex projective space of Cpn minus 1. So it has 2n minus 2 real dimensions. Before continuing, I will just mention, I will not discuss dynamics so much, a little bit. But usually we are using Fubini study distance. So it's a function of the overlap. For instance, this, our cosine, which corresponds to the geodesic distance at the sphere. And what's most important is, if you have any unitary evolution, so u is a unitary operator, for instance, h is Hamiltonian e to I h t, then psi prime, it's a vector. It just is transformed into a rotated vector psi prime. And of course, unitary evolution is nothing else as rotation. So it's an isometry. The distance between two states does not change during unitary evolution because the scalar product is preserved. By the way, many years ago, I was working on quantum chaos, and there's an interesting situation. In classical dynamics, you also, of course, have chaotic systems. You have systems for which two trajectories diverge in time. Here is a kind of paradox, because we see that for any two states, their distance is preserved. And the key issue is that the limits t to infinity, t is time, and n, size of the Hilbert space, this kind of classical limit, do not commute. But I will not discuss this issue today. I will just change the topic for a while and show you a picture. There are two people. What they are doing? Well, you don't see that. Maybe it's difficult to guess who is there. But of course, you can see they are talking. In fact, they are talking maybe not physics, but mathematics. They are Otto Nikodym and Stefan Banach. You should know the name. They were talking exactly 10 years ago. It was an important discussion about mathematics in Krakow at Plante Garden. I will come to this point later. This is a first model of the sculpture. I will return to it later on. While I'm showing it, first of all, it's good to talk with clever people. And especially it's interesting here, okay, sometimes we talk to mathematicians. So it's good if two physicists working in different branches do talk, or if a physicist, theoretical physicist talks to mathematicians. Now let's go to the space of mixed states. What are mixed states? Of course, you know, they are convex combinations of projectors into pure states. So there's an arbitrary number of those pure states, and those AI coefficients are non-negative sum to unity. So this set has altogether n squared minus 1 dimension. Mathematically, you can define it as a set of operators which sends Hilbert space, n-dimensional Hilbert space, into itself. So our density matrices, they are Hermitian, and they are positive defined. And trace is equal to 1. Of course, for n equal 2, it's just the Bloch ball, so it is Bloch sphere and its interior. The dimensionality of this set M2 is just n squared minus 1. So in this case, it's just standard three-dimensional solid ball. So you know how a ball looks like, a ball like a ball. And this is simple. However, a first question I will pose today, in fact, I posed it 10 years ago, but now I hope I understand it a little bit better. How the set of a qubit looks like? Why it is interesting? Well, of course, any n is interesting. Qubit, okay, I will show you a ball. Qubit is just a standard ball, convex hull of a sphere. But already a qubit is more complicated. It's an eight-dimensional set. So this is the ball, a set of mixed states of a qubit. For qubit, we see that dimensionality n squared minus 1 is 8. So it is an eight-dimensional, of course, convex set. The set is convex, you see. And let us think, what is the dimensionality of the set of pure states? We know this is CP2, CP2 complex projective space with two complex for four real dimensions. So look, what's interesting now? The boundary of this eight-dimensional set is seven-dimensional, but only four-dimensional subset is formed by pure states. Well, so the question is, how this set of mixed states for, let's say, n equal 3 or larger than 3 looks like? To be honest, even though we studied the problem for many, many, many years, I should better tell you, I don't know. I don't exactly know how this eight-dimensional object looks like. Therefore, a first approach is so-called apophatic approach. By the way, do you know this English word? What it means? Who knows? Is it a legal English word in Canada? It's not so used very often, yes? It's a kind of approach, if you cannot show how the object looks like, at least by contradiction you want to show how it does not look like. So this is the first approach to this problem. Again, we are discussing simplest possible non-trivial case of a quartet. It's eight-dimensional set. We want to know how it looks like. We don't know, so we want to show how it doesn't look like. So look, I have some objects here, and they are just elements of this game to proceed with this apophatic approach. So look at this. This is a good model. I took it from my kids as they were young here. So why this is apophatic model? So why our set of mixed states does not look like this? This is simple. Ah, please. This is not a convex set, yes? This is clear. Okay, let me continue. Okay, this is simple. Well, we know it's not a ball. For n equal 2, it is a ball. For n equal 3, it's not a ball. So again, this in an apophatic approach, it works. What I have now, okay, there's a T back. So how do you think? What's here, in a sense, wrong? Well, you should guess, it's simple. This is kind of a polytope. And we know by sure it's not a polytope. It's neither a ball nor a polytope. Look, it has some parts round and some flat. Round because like kind of a pulse of a Bloch ball. So let me take another object. Oops, sorry. In this direction. So look, this is a bit better. It's just a cylinder. It has some round parts and some flat. Again, why I can use this for apophatic approach? What is missing here? What is a key property of this set which differs from the object I tried to describe? Who is on? Well, it's a complicated word. No, it's much easier. Look, I used red pen here. What? There are two circles red. It should trigger the good answer. What is red here? The red is one circle here, one circle there. Those two circles, mathematically, they are what? Extremal states. Extremal states, they are just two. To get a cylinder, you take two circles and take convex hull of it. Simple as that. So now you understand what is missing here. What is the set of pure states, of extremal states here? Two circles. So it's not connected. We need to have a connected set of pure states. We know this, yes? Because from any pure states, you can, by continuous transformation, go to another pure state. Look, let me now make a minor trick. I rotate the object like this. So please, you can have it and show it. It's a very simple trick. Now it's better, isn't it? Now the set of states is connected, yes? But still, what is missing here? I can still use apophatic approach. Why it is not a good model of n equal 3 mixed states? What is missing? Sorry? Okay, this set of pure states is fine, it's connected. Okay, by the way, this is a nice example because look, the set of object is three-dimensional, set of mixed states is three-dimensional, boundary is two-dimensional, but set of pure states is one-dimensional. So dimensionality is smaller. Basically, what is the set of classical states for a quartet? Who knows? This is simple. It's a triangle because we take three numbers, P1 plus P2 plus P3 is equal to 1. Can you see it? So if you have P1, P2, and P3, 1, 1, 1, you plot a triangle and this is just a standard equilateral triangle, which is set of all classical states. So a triangle like this, yes? So it has to be, of course, inside. And in this object, Rob, you cannot put a triangle like this. So a triangle is somehow, you have to have a cross section, which is just an equilateral triangle because it's a Q-tip. Yes, are you with me? So this is a more, okay, here, another way to show this, I take a tennis ball and I define the following object. How the convex hull of the stitch of tennis ball looks like? It's more or less like this object here. So this is an example. It's a sphere, and inside is basically this object. By the way, it's amazing how much you can, how much volume, almost half of the volume you can take away, and this is what remains. This is just convex hull of this stitch. And this is kind of a good example, even though it's also not perfect, because it doesn't contain this triangle. So another option is to take a triangle and rotate it in a complicated way like this and take convex hull of it, which is a strange object like this, which at least it contains many triangles as a cross section. But you can continue. Of course, some people are joking because they say, oh, what is missing in all those models? They are not eight-dimensional. And of course, in three dimensions, you cannot show all the features of such an eight-dimensional set. But look, to summarize, even in the simplest non-trivial case for n equal 3, we still do not have a full understanding of the problem, and this is not a very simple problem. So look, this is a picture from Krakow, Wawel Castle, and Vistula River, and this picture will be important. I will use it to formulate a mathematical theorem shortly, so keep this in mind. And now look, this was kind of apophatic approach, and now we want to have more constructive approach. And we use a mathematical notion of numerical range. And to be honest, I'm very pleased to tell you, I learned about numerical ranges. Okay, I knew something, but I learned here in Waterloo 12 years ago, and it was a good coincidence for me. I met one of students of Ray, our collaborators, namely David Cripps. David Cripps taught me a lot and helped me to work with Mandwen Choi, who knew a lot about it. What it is, I will tell you in a second. Anyway, this is a nice mathematical notion which is used in math for hundreds of years, but somehow, okay, we use it in physics implicitly, but now it's good to learn how to use and apply this notion. Later on, one can use it also to discuss separable states and entangled states and so on. So this notion is very simple. Using physics notation, for any operator A, we define an expectation value like this. So for any operator A, not necessarily Hermitian, we define a set lambda, sometimes called numerical range, or field of values. Sometimes you denote it by W. Originally, it was German word, Werteformat. And this is nothing else as a set of all possible expectation values, this we know in physics, among arbitrary, normalized pure states. As simple as that. What about the name range? Why it's called numerical range? Let's first discuss the Hermitian case. If A is equal to its adjoint, and it has a spectrum from lambda 1 to lambda n, it's Hermitian, so the spectrum is real, then the numerical range is just an interval from this smallest eigenvalue to the largest. Just this interval from lambda 1 to lambda 4. And therefore it's a range. It's a range, it's an interval, a subset from the real axis. This is simple if A is Hermitian. In general, it could be a subset of the complex plane. And it's possible to show that it's a compact set, and there was already not so simple statement, it's now called Hausdorff-Teplitz theorem, which tells that for any A, this set is a convex subset of the complex plane. Here I have simple examples for just generic random matrices of order n. If a matrix is normal, by the way, do you know a normal matrix is such a matrix which commutes with its adjoint? So for a normal matrix, A commutator is equal to 0. this is normal matrix, and for normal matrix, the set is very simple. It's just convex hull of the spectrum. Well, you know what's the convex hull? And you see that it agrees with the previous picture if you have Hermitian operator, so the convex hull of the spectrum is just the range from this smallest to the largest eigenvalue. In a generic case, if this operator A is not normal, this is not satisfied, then this set also contains eigenvalues. They are generically complex eigenvalues, those red dots. This is an example of size 6, n is equal to 6. So you have 6 dots, and this set contains all the dots, but this is, you see, larger than convex hull of the spectrum. By the way, a question. Who of you was familiar with this notion? Do you use numerical range every day? Not yet. Okay, but this, as you see, not so difficult. And by the way, mathematicians worked on this for Hausdorff-Toeplitz theorem is like 100 years old, more or less. Yes, beginning of the previous century. So look, in the case of normal matrix, we know that you can even exactly show that this is just the set is convex hull of the spectrum. If you have diagonal matrix of size 2, just a segment, if the matrix is not Hermitian, it is a segment at the complex plane. If you have a matrix of size 3, it's just a triangle. Not necessarily equilateral triangle, any triangle basically is possible because you take 3 eigenvalues and take convex hull of 3 points, it's just any triangle. So this is just any triangle spanned by 3 eigenvalues. This is simple. In general, one can show that for matrices of size 2 with spectrum lambda 1, lambda 2, if this matrix is normal, then numerical range is just closed interval from first eigenvalue to the second. However, if it's not normal, then lambda numerical range is a full elliptical disk, and those 2 points are just focal points of this ellipse, and one can compute minor and major axis of this ellipse. And everything is known, as you see, for like 80 years. In the nice case, simplest case of a not normal matrix, like this Jordan one, 0, 1, 0, 0, you see it's not normal because it's very not symmetric. The spectrum is easy, 0, 0, it's degenerated. And then in this very case, numerical range forms a circular disk. Just disk with centered at 0 of radius 1/2. By the way, now comes the question. Look, if you take a set of pure states, is a Bloch theory we know we work with every day. And if you take a sphere, okay, so you know how it looks like, and you ask a question, what is the projection of a sphere onto a screen? What could you get? Well, of course you can get a circle, yes? Can you get an ellipse? Of course you can. It's sufficient to enough to tilt the screen. Maybe I will not go so too much about it with it. No, no, but I can do it. Sorry. This is an envelope I got from PI. Let me check. Okay, yes, you see. If you tilt the screen, you get an ellipse, and eventually this ellipse can even degenerate to what? To an interval. But you get not get anything more. Ellipse or an interval. Another question. So here you see, this is kind of what we work with, a space of pure states for n equal 2. What is the relation between somehow those disks of this guy, Marnangham from 1932, and our Bloch sphere? Somehow we're thinking, it's not a kind of coincidence. We can explain it. Okay, so here are exactly those examples of sometimes you have such a circular kind of shape, sometimes elliptical, but for n equal to nothing more. Okay, so here is, now I'm going back to Krakow. So this is the Wawel Castle from another side. This first picture was taken from here. Now is another side of the castle and the river. So now please look. here comes a mathematical theorem. You see this red arrow. My colleague Krzysztof Ciesielski proved a theorem which I formulated like this. With probability 1 minus epsilon, the bench Banach talked to Nikodym in 1916 was localized in eta neighborhood of this red arrow. And my mathematicians colleagues are trying to estimate, to find a functional relation between eta and epsilon. They haven't succeeded yet. However, this place is important. No, but to be honest, there was some debate, but they knew that Banach at this time was living in one of these houses close to the castle. By the way, please take into account, 1916, it was just in the middle of the First World War, and Krakow used to be at the front line. The Russian army was close to Krakow in 1915. It was not a good place to stay and live and work on mathematics. And then Banach was out of his studies. Nikodym was had a kind of not good position teaching at school. And they had basically not anything very clever to do. And they were just talking and discussing mathematics. And then what happened? A relatively well-known person, Steinhaus, he was already a PhD in mathematics. He was passing by, and somehow he could not help overhearing as those two young guys were talking about Lebesgue integral. And those days, it was a very new concept. He was not expecting that somebody in such a place was discussing this. So he approached those two guys, learned Banach, and all his life he was promoting Banach, helped him to get the PhD in Lviv and then the professorship position. And he had a lot of good papers, Steinhaus, but later on, he was always claiming that his best discovery, mathematical discovery, was Banach himself. So this is the plate which is now already mounted there. Otton, he is Polish part, he is English. Otton Nikodym and Stefan Banach in conversation about mathematics. This bench memorizes the famous meeting with Hugo Steinhaus in the Plante Garden in summer 16. So you see there was a 100 years of this event this year. So look, now we return back to our geometry. So we know now there's something strange. If you take an object and look at its shadow, basically it's really in classical optics, not geometrical optics, or standard geometrical optics. You can discuss, like, for instance, if you take a triangle, by the way, what kind of shapes you can, what are the all possible projections of such an equilateral triangle? By the way, this equilateral triangle is this one. It's a set of classical states. So it's easy to see that any triangle up to, you can get any triangle, even it can be degenerate to an interval like this, and you can get an arbitrary triangle up to affine transformation. And here's the statement, which basically goes like this. If you consider Cn is the set of classical states, so for n equal 3, it's a triangle. For n equal 4, is what? It's a simplex, tetrahedron. For n equal arbitrary, it's just simplex. And you take this regular simplex, and the set of all orthogonal projections of this simplex onto a plane is equivalent to set of all possible numerical ranges, those operators, of normal matrices of this size. And now if you take non-normal matrices, there is relation to set of quantum states. So in short, if this is the set of quantum states, this is easy for n equal 2, then the set of all possible projections onto the two-plane is equivalent to the set of all numerical ranges of all matrices of this size. So in a sense, we can verbally interpret numerical range of an operator as a projection of our favorite object, set of states, onto a plane. Maybe this is a key observation, so I would make a short break and ask you, are you with me? So we have this, for instance, eight-dimensional object, which is difficult to describe. We don't know how it looks like because it's eight-dimensional. But all those objects give us all possible shapes of the projection of this eight-dimensional set onto a plane. And those A's operators here, they correspond somehow to choosing an angle of the projection. So the object is fixed, but you just discuss different orientation of the screen. So those operators A, they describe position of the screen. Object is fixed. Well, so here are examples of yes?
Question. True. I'm a bit surprised that you focus on normal matrices in one case and you don't have that restriction in the other case, because I would have said the possible projections of an eight-dimensional space are the same, regardless of whether that eight-dimensional space is a simplex or a quantum state space, the set of projections should be the same set. So why is it that the set of matrices are different?
No. Look, set of classical states is just a subset of a set of quantum states. You will agree with it. Also, set of normal matrices is in a sense set of subset, a special set of matrices, which you can say is embedded inside set of not normal matrices. And here, I think it's interesting observation that classical states, they correspond to normal matrices, because for normal matrices, you have polygons obtained projecting simplex. If you take a simplex is a convex hull of k points. And any its projection will also be a polygon with n sides. Are you with me? However, if you go from classical states to quantum states, you have to take all possible matrices, and now the shapes are more complicated. They could also be polygons, but generically they are not. They are somehow larger. So what we see here, that for any, if you take entire set of matrices and look at those numerical ranges, you get all possible projections of this set of mixed state we are interested in.
Okay, but let me ask my question again, which is that it sounded to me earlier you were saying that you can label projections by the matrix.
Yes. A projection of two objects. Here, they were first objects. Here, the object is like simplex in this case.
Yes.
And here, the object is set of mixed states, quantum states of larger dimension.
Okay. But if I think about indexing all the projections just in terms of the geometric intersection with the state space, right? So that
yes.
I have some sort of geometric description of the set of all projections, then I would be able to organize these different A matrices into, you know, which projection it corresponds to. And so it's a many-to-one mapping between the A matrices and the geometric projections.
No,
only
if you take normal matrix, it corresponds to very special. Normal matrix is very special. And classical states you can consider as a projection of a very special projection of the set of mixed states, where you don't see this quantumness somehow.
I don't want to delay you, but you're still missing what I'm asking. I'm saying independent of what the state space
yes.
you're looking at, it could be classical, it could be quantum, it could
yes,
be post-quantum,
yes,
whatever.
Yes, yes.
It's a geometrical object.
Yes.
Now I get to just start talking about all possible two-dimensional
yes,
projections of
yes,
that geometrical object
true.
Without referring to what
okay,
they projected.
Okay, good.
Now it seemed to me you were saying that there was some sort of mapping between matrices and possible two-dimensional projections. It would seem to me that given that the set of two-dimensional projections is the same regardless of what the state space is, that it can't be that this is a one-to-one mapping.
I'm sorry. Now I got the point. But I have not said it's one-to-one.
Right. Okay.
Of course,
that's what I'm asking.
No,
is it one-to-one in either case?
Of course, if you have a projection from eight dimension to two or to three, it cannot be one-to-one. If you're making a projection, you lose somehow information.
We're talking about a mapping between these matrices.
But it's not one-to-one. Of course.
Okay. And one last question, which is that if you can get your classical state spaces from the quantum state spaces by certain kinds of restrictions,
is
there a sense in which you can identify the map from the non-normal matrices to the normal matrices as somehow induced by that map between state spaces?
No. You can only say that classical states are embedded in quantum and normal matrices are embedded inside non-normal. This is how can you look at it? Inside, as form a subset. Okay, so here are some examples for n equal 3. So look, this is a constructive approach. Now this is exactly three different objects. By the way, here's a triangle. In a sense, it refers to your case because this is the case of normal matrix. It's a standard triangle, convex hull of 3 points. Here, another class, this has 3 sides. This has 2 sides of the boundary, 2 eigenvalues here, 1 there. There is case 3 eigenvalues here and 1 line here. or generally case three eigenvalues and kind of oval. So there are four classes of possible shapes of projections of this eight-dimensional set onto the two-space, and moreover, as usual, mathematicians knew about it. I mean, they discussed all those numerical ranges, classified them, but they were not interested in quantum, and somehow I think people, there was not much overlap between those who were studying this literature and those who care about set of quantum states. So this paper I refer to is Keeler, Rodman, and Spitowski, not so old, by the way, and they just classified all those possible shapes, and for us, this is exactly the classification due to our observational theorem, this is exactly classification of all possible shapes of projection of this eight-dimensional set onto a plane. For n equal 4 is more complicated, but now I will define a slight generalization of this notion. It's called joint numerical range of set of m operators. It looks strange, but it's very simple. I take, let's say, m different matrices. Here it's easier to assume they are Hermitian, so they are observables. And I, for such a set, take all possible sets of expectation values of those m operators. And it has a very nice physical meaning. I take measurement of m observables, and I'm asking, what are possible results of the measurement in this m-dimensional set R to power m?
You don't need C at the
m? M is arbitrary.
You mean complex numbers, not reals? Or these Hermitian?
I here assume that A is Hermitian. All A are Hermitian. However, if you take m equal 2 to show the relation with the previous concept, for any A not normal, not Hermitian, I can decompose it into Hermitian part and I anti-Hermitian. And it's easy to show that this lambda of A I discussed previously is just nothing else as a joint numerical range of Hermitian part and anti-Hermitian, which gives additional motivation to study the previous notion because it is just standard numerical range. If the operator is, as we are used to work, is normal, if it's Hermitian, then the numerical range is just a part of a line. If it's not, then it means I have two Hermitian observables, and on the plane I mark possible results of measuring two observables among the same state. Well, and now maybe it's enough to say that if you take exactly n squared minus 1 of those operators and take them to be independent, so in a sense to form a basis in the space of Hermitian operators, then this numerical range of all of those will be up to an affine transformation, the set of all pure states. And then convex hull will give us exactly the set of mixed quantum states. I will give you a concrete example in a second. So if you take, for instance, n equal 2 and take a basis of famous, well-known Pauli matrices, take three of those, which has now a very concrete meaning. Look, I take three measurements, and I take the set of all possible results of measuring spin x, y, and z. What I get? Of course, Bloch sphere. So this is just a Bloch sphere. By the way, a sphere, an empty sphere, it's not a convex set. This is the set of pure states. But convex hull of it already forms the Bloch ball again. Later on, if you take, for instance, 8, instead of Pauli matrices, Gell-Mann trace-less matrices, so generators of SU3, then joint numerical range forms affine transformation of CP2, set of all pure states, and it's convex hull, just our eight-dimensional set of mixed states we are interested in. Okay, and now look. Let's take a non-trivial example. So again, non-trivial example is n equal 3. We take a triple of Hermitian operators. A1, A2, A3 are arbitrary Hermitian matrices of size 3. But we can specify, we can have a concrete question. We fix those three matrices and look for joint numerical range. Of course, by definition, it is a part of R3. It's like object three-dimensional, it has, once again, a physical interpretation. It is a convex set which gives us the results of three measurements of three different observations. So now look. Here it is. I will show you how it looks like. This is one of the first usage of 3D printer to really print results. They are results of computations. So look, here I will give you a question, so please pass it over. There are there are basically 10 classes of those objects. Please, you know, already pass it through. So wait, here this part and here that part. Oh, please have a look. And the question is, what is the color code? Those colors mean something. I will tell you in a second. They denote different class of those objects. They look more or less like this. So please, think for a while. It's a very concrete object, three-dimensional, which gives me exactly a set of measurements of three different, in fact, arbitrary observables. And such papers appear recently. People do such a things, of course, for larger systems. But this is kind of physical importance. And then it's easy to see from those considerations that those sets have to be convex. So in a sense, what you have in your hands? What's this? Look. What you have in your hands? You have a three-dimensional projections of eight-dimensional set of mixed states. Before I was using apophatic approach, I could not show you how it looks like. But here, at least, I can exactly show you how projections of this set look like, which is something. And I know that there are exactly 10 classes of those. It depends how you count. By the way, to produce such a thing, you need three objects. So one is a clever student, is Konrad Szymański. Second is good software, which is here. And then there's a machine and the ink. So ink looks like this. Yes. So here is he, Konrad. He did all of this. And then he used, I was told, in some cases, he used of his girlfriend nail color to paint it for you. So it's a very clever usage of, yes, maybe ladies will tell you, is it possible? Yes, you use such objects to paint nails or such outprints, 3D outprints. So who has any ideas about the color code? It makes sense somehow. Are there any? So I think maybe this is the same. So now look. Before those mathematicians discussed how the two-dimensional cross-sections look like, and they counted number of flat parts of the boundary. Now you can guess. Any ideas concerning colors? What colors mean?
Corresponds to the number of faces.
Exactly. That's so simple as that. But, okay, so they correspond to number of faces like 2, 3, 4, 1 flat faces. However, there are, for instance, two red objects. I don't know who has red objects. There are two red objects. Red objects have no faces, yes? But there are two of them, so there are two classes. What is the difference between those two red objects? Any idea? Look, okay, here's maybe not exactly the same picture, but among the first, we classify objects calculating the number of faces and then of singularities like intervals. One object has no. Yes, one projection has two-dimensional face, but has one-dimensional face. So basically, we have two numbers, you don't see it. We compute number of ellipses and number of segments. And by those two numbers, you can classify, and we can prove that there are not many, the 9 standard classes and some additional. The black bodies here are very simple. Where are the black? No, but I think they are robust. They are robust, I hope. So where are the black objects? What are the, okay, black, how do black objects look like? Yeah, they are simple. How many one-dimensional faces they have? Infinitely many, because they are cones. So in a sense, they are, in some sense, they have infinitely many one-dimensional faces. Okay, so look, now maybe you are bored a bit. If you are a physicist, you can ask, where is physics? We are discussing some simple mathematics. Okay, we use a lot of time. No, by the way, how am I doing? Okay, still time. So where is physics? What is physics, by the way? So look, if you kick a ball, it will stop at some point. This is physics, yes? If you buy an ice cream and wait a while, and not during the winter in Canada, but during summer in Canada, what will happen? You know this. This is physics. It will melt. Now, a more concrete example for Raymond. If you construct entangled state and do nothing, what will happen? it will decohere sooner or later to a separable state. So this is a kind of a physics. We know that it must be like this. So look, now we go for a while to discuss composed systems and entangled states. Of course, you know the definition. First, we have to introduce tensor product structure in our Hilbert space. Minimal possible size is 2 times 2 is 4. And of course, we define separable states, they are product states. All others are not of the above form, they are entangled. And you know, of course, maximally entangled state is this famous Bell state, and we know there are many entanglement measures. For instance, the simplest entanglement entropy is nothing else as von Neumann entropy of the partial trace, so reduced density matrix. The more this partial trace is mixed, the more entangled is the initially pure state. So, well, this is one that cross-section of the set of 2-qubit states. There are 4 basis states. Color denotes the entropy of entanglement. Blue means no entanglement, separable. For instance, this edge corresponds to look 0, 0, and 1, 0. So the second 0 is the same. This is, of course, separable edge, while this edge and this edge, they are entangled. So red, yellowish is more entangled, and this pink here is the most entangled states. In a sense, you can see they are most distant from the set of separable states, like psi plus and pi plus the famous Bell state. By the way, well, I'm sorry I cannot resist of showing this picture because I did this picture here. I did this picture here in Waterloo exactly 12 years ago. As the evidence is, it's not a perfect object. Here is, I'm sorry to say, it's an imperfection. It was not planned, but now I can claim it's really not a it's not a numerical. I really did it with hands, not perfect. Yeah? And now what I'm saying is that it was the old version of the book, but now the second version, second edition is ready. I hope it will be published next year. And there are, I think, interesting chapters on mutually unbiased bases I'm not going to discuss now, and the multipartite entanglement. So it will be, I hope, much better than the first version, and a few errors are now correct. Look, for mixed states, the question of entanglement is more difficult. We know that separable states are convex combination of product states. Entangled are those which are not of the above form. We know that it's not easy to answer a question if you are given any density matrix law, is whether it can be written in this form or not. This so-called separability problem is solved by the positive partial transpose criterion only in the simplest cases, 2 times 2 and 2 times 3. And already for 3 times 3, this is difficult. Well, you know that if you take the simplest case of 2 qubits, so now we have a tetrahedron, but it's a different tetrahedron, tetrahedron of the spectrum. By the way, it's a classical simplex. Yes, tetrahedron of the spectrum is exactly our set of classical states, so eigenvalues. Then we know that the maximal possible ball, which can be inscribed inside, is separable. It's called separable ball around the maximally mixed state here in the center of tetrahedron, which contains all eigenvalues equal to 1/4. It's just identity, risk-rate identity matrix. And if you take now a kind of a cross-section, this is a kind of cross-section of the space of 2-qubit mixed states. Here is the center for identity, maximally mixed state. This is the boundary of entanglement. You see this is the maximal ball here inside, separable ball, and the dark denotes here the scale of entanglement. So this is the boundary, and here are 2 separable pure states and maximally entangled pure states. So in a sense, you can see now, geometrically speaking, for any state, entangled state law, which belongs to this part or this part, entanglement is just a distance to the closest separable state here. So this picture is also very, very old. We improved it a little bit, but not too much. What we did recently, we took just like here you see 3-dimensional projections of this, now it's 15-dimensional set, and now projections of the smaller subset of the set of separable states, and look how those objects sit one inside another. I don't have them here, but it's also a nice game to understand better how the set of separable states sits inside. Just you know perhaps, but for 2 qubits, there is a so-called simple positive partial transpose criterion. For any 2-qubit mixed states, such a state is separable if this is so-called partial transpose is positive. So this goes in two directions only for two qubits. And then if you take the set of all mixed state, this partial transpose is like a reflection. So you ask what states sit inside after reflection. So you see that the set of separable states corresponds more or less to the cross-section of the set of states with its reflected image. So just to show that I'm proceeding and going to the last part of the talk, here's Stefan Banach already sitting at his bench close to the Wawel Castle. He was somehow like 22 years old during this discussion. And now a short reminder what are quantum maps. If you have a simplest case of one qubit, so a block ball, quantum operation is just a linear, completely positive trace preserving map, which sends block ball into block ball. It can be with contraction. Often it's not reversible. Of course, if it's unitary dynamics, it's just reversible rotation. It could be non-unitary and non-reversible. And now any such map can be written in this environmental form. You take our state raw and you couple it to some kind of environment, and then you let those unitary matrices mix it together, and after a partial trace you get a non-unitary dynamics, which can be also written in this famous Krauss form, where those Krauss operators here are arbitrary. This form A raw A dagger implies hermeticity and positiveness of raw, and then to preserve the trace, this identity resolution has to be satisfied. So now look, we studied the simplest possible model of decoherence, kind of discrete quantum dynamics. We have a unitary part, just rotation of the set of mixed states, and now a decoherence kind of contraction given by some Krauss operators, which are rather simple. They are basically defined by sigma x, sigma y. I consider now two qubits. I will not go into details. They are relatively simple, like one qubit Pauli channels and some dynamics or some decaying channels. We study different models of non-unitary dynamics. And now look what we can see. Here you have a time, this time evolution, and this is the entanglement. And sometimes you can observe such slow decay. Sometimes you can see such revivals. There are many different, not so many, but a few possible scenarios. For instance, you can have such a strange case that you have decay of entanglement, then nothing, silence, and then sometimes a strange revival. After our paper, there was a paper by Yao and Eberle, and many other papers by Eberle, and they had a good name for this effect. Is if this entanglement decreases and stays forever, it's called sudden death of entanglement, and this is somehow known in the literature. We have not had, even though our papers with the Horodetsky family was earlier, we had not thought of such a nice name for this very, very simple effect. And now look, so a couple of years later, I plotted such a generic sketch, like an artist's view. Here is a set of all states. This is the set of separable states inside, which includes the maximal separable ball. And basically, those effects are very trivial. Entanglement sudden death, so this red trajectory means there's a strong contraction, strong decoherence. This trajectory goes inside the set of separable states and stays there forever. Those revivals of entanglement, which used to be strange for some people, they're also very simple. The trajectory goes around, it goes through the set of separable states, goes away, so it's a bit entangled and so on, and possibly can, depending on those parameters, can go here or there, and possibly the entanglement will decay. And now, I was very much somehow pleased with the fact. This was my sketch, I would say artist, I'm not artist, but general sketch, produced some 10 years ago, and now using our numerical shadow technique, we exactly did the same, but this is already the result of computation. What's here? This is the shadow of the entire set of states. This is the kind of a shadow of the projection, so it's based on this numerical range of the set of separable states, and here is trajectory, which basically shows such a trajectory like here, but this was just a kind of naive sketch, and this is a result of computation, which only shows you that those ideas of projecting the object and also its dynamics onto a plane or onto a free plane is useful to understand what's going on in this main dimensional space. Yes, I think I should slowly conclude. I will mention an interesting paper by Gil Kalai, who basically, you know, you are working, some of you, in Institute of Quantum Computing, and you know that in real life you have to kind of cope with noise. What I've said here basically concerns only nice kind of dynamics, ideal dynamics without the noise. So, in his more mathematical paper, he claims that there is a kind of classical mountain of classical computing which is real, which exists, and there are some noisy quantum systems, and possibly there might be some paths to the much larger mountain which describes universal quantum computing, which is kind of expected, and there are kind of bridges which can allow us to go from here to there. But it's also possible that this is kind of pessimistic, a conjecture that this quantum computing mountain is only a fantasy, or is it such a word, Fata Morgana in English? Which basically hardly exists or does not exist at all, because if you go from here there, because of noise, there's no path here, and basically this all nice picture is just an illusion. So I of course don't know who is right yet, but definitely it's important to take into account decoherence and noise in all kind of theoretical investigations. In this talk, I want to tell you that the set of mixed states has a lot of, let's say, mysteries, even for n equal 3 or n equal 4, which you can discuss set of entangled states. And I believe that using the notion of numerical range and joint numerical range, you can study projections of the set of states for 2-dimension or for 3-dimension. But also, you can study the projections of the dynamics inside this state, and from those projections try to understand something. So in general, I advocate geometric approach. And you see now that this geometric approach allows us to explain simple scenario concerning dynamics of quantum entanglement and those effects of entanglement revival or entanglement sudden death. And of course, much, much, much more work is still required to understand the consequences of noise and decoherence for known schemes of quantum computing. And here, at the very, very, very end, I'll show you the bench commemorating the discussion between two mathematicians, Stefan Banach and Otto Nikodym, which took part in Krakow in summer 1916, possibly very close to the Wawel Castle. And this bench was opened last month in Krakow. So if you happen to come, please come and visit us. You can just sit here, relax, and or even listen what they have to say. Thank you very much.
I wonder if you thought about the applications of the joint numerical range to generalized uncertainty principles.
Great question. So to be honest, I will not say it loud. of course, very nice question. So I hope to be able, even tell you who. This guy Konrad, who makes those objects, I hope he will send you his master thesis about it. And now I can tell you that some clever people from Waterloo asked him about his results, so I hope next week we'll return to the problem. But of course, we do work on it. And because not so many, I think there was not large overlap between people interested in quantum mechanics and uncertainty relations and numerical range, there is likelihood we can get something possibly new and interesting. But very good question.
For a given dimension D, is it possible to infer the existence or non-existence of lugs from the shadows? Can you use the shadows?
Yes, good question. No, I'm afraid not. Look, in general, some mathematicians say it's very difficult to infer, to make such a strong statement, especially if you have a projection even from 3D to 2D, you can basically have negative statements, but not in the sense that you can exclude existence of something. Because due to projections, you somehow lose information. So of course you can have like tomography, which means projections. In a sense, this is like tomography. You have a projections onto different planes, all possible planes. But concerning MUPES, well, we also worked on this, but here we have not used never numerical joint numerical range, and I don't see a clear method how it could be useful. I mean, we studied also the case n equals 6 mutually unbiased bases. So some 10 years ago, I was betting there are 4 at least mutually unbiased bases of size 6, but unfortunately, I was not betting too much money. Now I would bet in the other direction.
So you talked about if you use a set of operators that are traceless and form a basis for the operator space of dimension n, and joint numerical range of those operators is the quantum state space.
Yes,
in that dimension.
Yes.
If instead you were to take, for example, like in, you know, just in the 2D case, instead of taking the 3 polys, if I took, say, you know, axes corresponding to the vertices of tetrahedron, so
yes,
symmetric informationally complete basis, and then, you know, form
yes,
the traceless operators.
How many of them? But 3 only. 3 parts of a sick POVM, yes? 3 matrices.
I'm imagining taking all 4 of them.
Okay, all 4 of them. Okay. Okay, yes. So I believe the answer would be you would get an ellipsoid. I'm okay, in general case, for n equal 2. But this is my guess. For 3 Pauli matrices, you have a sphere. For 4, okay, if you take only 3 which are linearly independent, you also get a kind of ellipsoid, because there will be a fine transformation of a sphere.
I guess where I was going with this is that in the 2D case, it's not so interesting, but I wonder if in higher dimensions, thinking about the joint numerical ranges of symmetric information complete type bases might be informative.
Okay. So another good question. So here I have to say we were not working on this. However, what I only have to say that recently there were some papers written by, I would say, serious people. They were studying different things, more complicated models and dynamics related to solid state physics, but basically what eventually they were studying sets of possible measurements of 3 like magnetizations of whatever, but they are still observable and still they fit to this mathematical structure of joint numerical ranges of something, and they have convex sets somehow, and they were not knowing that it is exactly fits to this framework.
So another question along these lines is, if I was only interested in certain operator subspaces that maybe had some symmetry property, then it's conceivable that you could get a nice geometric picture of those smaller sets of states.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Are there any natural candidates for, like, I suppose if I went to like composite systems, I could ask, well, what does the set of symmetric operators look like?
So, of course, it would depend somehow how would you orient your screen, whether, because it's a good question, how a subset of entire space of states is projected.
Right.
But here, I think a lot of things can be done here, and yeah, I don't know the answer. Okay, whether it's useful or not useful, it's a different story. However, there's an important thing to say concerning higher dimensions. Look, if you have a cube, you know how a cube looks like, and you take a cross section or projection, what kind of shape you can get if you take a cube and cut it? But what polygon? Can you get pentagon? You can get, of course, pentagon and hexagon, but not more, because there are 6 faces. This is clear. If you take, more difficult question, 4-dimensional cube. I don't have it with me, but it exists somewhere. And you take 2-dimensional cross-section. What can you get? Who knows? How many, simple question, how many faces a cube in 4 dimension has? Please count. Who knows? How many? If there are four dimensions, simple. There are two faces in each direction. So two, it is together four. So it's easy to prove that any cross section will be polygon with not more octagon, not more than eight sides. Are you with me? If you know, you are not? No, you must be.
You said it had four faces?
It's four directions, two faces in each direction, okay. Eight faces together. So this cross section will cut not more than eight faces. So we'll have a polygon, of course, not more than octagon. If you work in five dimensions, you will got a, how is it called? Dodeca. Okay, a polygon with ten sides. If you go to high dimensions, to n dimensions, what you will get? You will get a polygon with not more than 2n sides. Now let's take n equal 50. How a polygon looks like if it has 100 sides? Exactly. And then there's a famous theorem in mathematics. It's called Dvoretsky theorem. Maybe some of you have heard, which basically tells us if you take any convex shape, which lives in n dimensions, so under some technical mathematical assumptions, you can show that with probability 1, if you take two-dimensional cross-section like this, the cross-section will be close to epsilon close to a disk, kind of a circle. So here, what's interesting, if n is high, very high, the structure is very complicated. But the structure you will hardly ever see, because with probability 1, the general cross-section is close to a circle. So it's very interesting that circle corresponds to the n equal 2, always. I mean, cross-section of the ball must be a circle or an ellipse. And if you take a very complicated high object of with n going to infinity, even though you can have very complicated objects, very likely it is to be a circle again. And this is a nice mathematical statement. So this is kind of an answer to your question.
You're not only thinking polytropes. You're thinking polytropes.
Well, okay. You will not get polytopes you will get always if you have a cube. In our case of mixed states, it needs not to be a polytope, but practically you can strictly prove that in sense of how is it called Hausdorff distance, this object is epsilon distant from a disk. So it's a complicated object, but very close to a disk. Thanks for coming.